Okay, testing, testing. Okay. My name is Sasha Roberts, interviewing Don Muse on February 19th at his home in Roanoke, Virginia. Okay, so to start, just tell me your name, like where you're from, and where you grew up.
My name is Donald C. Muse. I'm originally from Roanoke, Virginia. I was born September 1st, 1958, and Roanoke is home.
Okay, so can you describe your childhood? If you had any siblings, were you close with them, or were you close with your parents?
My founding years, my parents and I and my siblings lived in the Lincoln Terrace housing project. I went to school at Lincoln Terrace Elementary. I had three other siblings. It was a good life. But things, it was the 60s, growing up in the 60s. It was a different time and day than it is today. As being a young person who is Afro-American and gay at 2017 has no idea what it would be like in the 60s, 60s or the 70s. It's a whole other world now.
What age did you figure out you were different or just not like everyone else?
Probably 12 or 13 for sure.
Okay.
But the 70s brought about an impact for gay people because on television, you were seeing all kinds of television shows and made-for-TV specials about gay teenagers, mm-hmm. gay men and women, transsexuals and people having operations and stuff like sex changes, which were really groundbreaking television shows that were being presented. And if you're a inquisitive person, you'd watch those TV shows and you'd wonder, what the hell is going on? Because you don't really hear that spoken around your, you know, the family table. But once you see it on TV, you know there are other people out there just like you. And today you have a lot of things with the transgender and the sex changes, but it's commonplace now, and it was just unheard of by the 60s and the 70s. It wasn't spoken about or anything. So when you did see something like that, that was groundbreaking.
Yeah. Did that impact you in any way? Did that make you feel more comfortable?
Well, I knew there were other people out there like myself.
Yeah.
I wasn't alone. And I never thought I was isolated because, you know, you constantly would hear people joke about living in Roanoke. But Roanoke was the third largest city in the state. There was Norfolk, Richmond, and Roanoke. Outside of that, you were living in Bodoc. You were living in the hills. And I always have that to be thankful for because at that time, even as being in a population of 100,000 people, this was a major place. And truly, there were gay people in Roanoke. Lots of gay people in Roanoke. So I wasn't isolated. I wasn't living out in some farm community. Roanoke was the city. And you saw gay people, even though they were very low-key.
What age did you decide to come out, or it just, like, happened? Like, no one, you didn't have to tell.
Well, I was definitely in high school. And I actually went to Jefferson High School, but I didn't finish because they closed the school in 74, and it became Patrick Henry. But everyone stayed at the school because they didn't have enough room for us to occupy the campus. But I ended up graduating from Patrick Henry High, but I was at what they called the Jefferson Hall campus. And I had lots of gay friends at Jefferson Hall, especially my lesbian friends. Gay men didn't actually come out and really be vocal about it, but I swear the lesbians didn't care. I'm telling you, I love them, and I just absolutely love them because they had found that meaning for their lives. I'm not kidding you. And I had a lot of lesbian friends.
Were your parents, family, and friends accepting, or did you have a hard time?
In the community you grow up in Roanoke, especially the Afro-American community, it's very hard for them to understand that one of their children is a homosexual or a lesbian. It's really hard. But I will say this, and I don't want to offend anyone. They do tolerate their children to where they're, at most parts, they will let them stay with them or stay home, even though that's the situation, compared to my white counterparts, who many families threw them out. They all got thrown out of their homes. And it was a commonplace thing. They got kicked out. And we didn't. And it's still like that today in some places. Right. Their family members throw them out. And I don't know if that's because of a generational or cultural thing. Was it just that when you sometimes they find out one of their children are different than everything else, and because of religious beliefs or whatever, they've got to go? But I can say for the Afro-American community, pretty much, they seldom ever throw their children in the street simply because of being gay. Seldom. I'm not saying there isn't any, but it's seldom done. Seldom. They just sort of like keep it quiet and just don't make a lot of attention to yourself. But hell, you're gay. What attention do you not want to bring to yourself? You're not like your brothers and sisters. And they can egg you on about all kinds of things. But you know, siblings are siblings.
Yeah. Okay, so going off of when you were talking about your high school life, so what was it like? Did you have a good time? Was it fun? Was it hard?
No, I'm a very outgoing person.
Oh, okay.
I really am. And I'm the same person I am now today when I was in high school. I didn't give a damn if you liked me or not. And I didn't care if I just sat at the right table. You know, there's this thing there about kids sitting at the right table with the right group. I'd sit my ass at your table, and I didn't care if you liked it or not. I was really a hated person. People didn't want to be around a lot of gay guys. Think about it.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, you know, you're the guy, you're the jock, and you and your buddies are sitting there, and all of a sudden I sit my fat ass down next to you and start talking to you. That brings a whole lot of attention. But I just want to be friendly. I'm not necessarily trying to hit on you or anything like that. I just want to see what's going on with everybody. But I wasn't trying to hide anything. Everybody knew who I was. And it was relaxed.
Were you bullied in any way?
I had a couple of fights. I had several fights.
Wow.
But you don't run from your bully. Not from where I come from. It's just not done. You just take the ass whipping or not. Whatever you do, I'm serious. You just take it or you give one. But one or the other, you don't run home. Because you're going to have your family send you right back outside and find the guy or guys that was going to beat you up. You better come home with some scars and some missing teeth. There is no running from your bully. I'm not saying that gay men and gay women aren't bullied, and you know, sometimes to the point where there is nobody to help them. But I'm in a family where I've got brothers and sisters and I've got cousins. We're coming for your ass. You can believe it, Frank. It's not going to happen like that. And it didn't happen like that for me. I wasn't isolated. I had an insulated family. And if you picked on, it's just like living in, you know, rural Virginia and these people who live out in the country. You pick on one, you pick on them all. So that's the truth. I wasn't worried about anything like that. There'd be retaliation for my family and my friends. So I was one of the lucky ones.
Okay, moving on. When you were in high school, did you have any romantic relationships, or did you date any girls, or you never even went by any girls?
No, I had lots of female friends.
Okay.
And I don't consider them my dates. I just had lots of female friends. We had a ball. We had an absolute ball together. Even to this day, I have lots of female friends. They don't live with me or anything like that. They just drink and pass out here and, you know, take their bras off or whatever and fall asleep, and I just put them to bed. I don't care. Their husband calls me, asks me if my wife's there. I go, yes. Still to this day, just like in high school, your girlfriend is over here passed the hell out. Because gay women, not gay women, but women per se, usually want to have a gay male friend. but not necessarily an effeminate gay friend. I'm talking about somebody says something to you in the bar, I'm gonna punch his ass out. And you know that lip wrist thing, that's all a myth for a lot of gay men. No, we'll take you out. We'll take you out. But gay women love having a gay male friend. Their boyfriends and husbands don't usually care for it. And the problem with me is that my women friends who I had through high school and college, I lost a great many of them once they married. Because once they became Mrs. Somebody, the husbands didn't always see it, you know, for their wives to be coming over here and hanging out with me while I'm partying and I'm single. And they are married and trying to start families and stuff like that. You don't want to be partying with Dawn 24/7. You're married now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the only heartbreak for me as far as my women friends came. They got married and started families. And I just didn't see them anymore, except for the few that I see now.
Did you party or go out downtown in high school?
Oh,
downtown
God,
Roanoke?
Yes. People say,
what was
God,
it like?
In the 60s and late 60s and all through the 70s, downtown Roanoke was the red light district. We're talking hoes. Guys dressed up in women's clothing, making a living or trying to make a living, if you want to use the term drag queens. Which was really funny because the statute of the law back then, the police would arrest you if you were in women's clothing. You never seen so many drag queens jump over a car like Ellie Mae Clampett from the Beverly Hillbillies trying to run from the police, because they would arrest you even if you were soliciting sexual favors or whatever. Downtown was, the city market was just dive bars and prostitutes and drag queens and the businesses that were down there. But it was a gritty and rough place after business hours. It became a whole other world. I loved it. I spent most of my time downtown. At bars like the Manhattan, the Capitol, Miss Tony's, the Old Belmont, the Last Straw. These places are all gone, but they were full of gay people and lesbians and gays and people who just didn't care. They just didn't care. Roanoke was like Dodge City downtown at night. It's not like that today. It's been what you call regendified or something. They cleaned it up. I hate it. Absolutely hate downtown. It's just not any fun.
So, after high school, did you go on to college?
I did. I attended Ferrum College.
Okay. What did you major in, or did you have any?
I majored in paralegal studies. I didn't finish, but I majored in it. I thought I wanted to work in a law office. But then I got the creative bug in me, and I went on to start writing and singing and doing demos and backup singing and that kind of thing, and worked with that to see what happens with that.
Tell me a little bit about that. I don't
want to
know.
It worked out for me and with some people. Trying to make it in the industry is hard, but everybody thinks if you're a gay person, you know, that's one of the safe places to go is the entertainment industry. You can be who you want to be. So it was just sort of like a logical thing for me to pursue it. Songwriting and playwriting, you know, be a playwright of theater. Everybody thinks everybody is gay in theater anyway. So, you know, who knows? I don't know. But it was pretty good. It didn't pay a lot. Didn't pay a lot.
Did you stick with that through your 20s or... So on.
I did. I'm still doing it now.
Okay.
I'm still doing it now.
Okay.
I write. I've had some good moments where my songs won quite a few awards, and I've got recognition for them. And and even in Roanoke, most people don't think there's a lot of talented people or men and women in here, but there are. Roanoke has a wellspring of talented people. They just don't have the push, or many of them need to leave this town and go somewhere else to figure out that Roanoke isn't just the only place that you can play at a local bar or something like that. You need to get out of here.
Yeah. Did you plan on moving? Did you go
anywhere? From Roanoke, I left to go to D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, Nashville, L.A., Montreal, and London. London, England. I got out. I got out.
What place was your favorite?
In America, D.C. and New York. Even though Washington is a very political city, it has a great music and art scene. One of the best. London was overrated. It's nice, but it was overrated.
What'd you like about New York?
Well, when I lived there, it was gritty and it was the murder capital of the world. And you could get an apartment for $300 a month. Now, a one-bedroom apartment in New York is like $2,300. I liked it when it was just dirty New York. Graffiti on the wall and people throwing you, you know, crap in your face every year, every time you go in front of somebody. It was very confrontational. So if you're going to move to New York and you're sort of a timid person, you're going to come out of that real quick. The downside of it was, being that I was a gay person, I saw a lot of tragedy for young gay youths, not just Afro-Americans. They come out of the foster care systems and homes and stuff, and they find their way to New York, but they have no family and they have no support. So they ended up in really, really dangerous, and usually they died, suicide, murder, whatever. But New York was just that way. The city takes you very quickly.
Did you feel accepted there?
As far as New York is concerned, God, yes. You're talking about gay. Overly gay. I wanted some of them to move to Jersey or something so there'd be so many damn gay people in New York. It was really gay. Was it safe in the 70s and 80s? No. It was a very unsafe city.
So we're working with the drop-in center, and we're talking about the stigma of HIV and AIDS. And so what was that like in the 80s?
Well, most of the people here have no idea about the new... I don't know if there's a rise or a resurgence of any HIVs to the point where people are dying at a record rate. I'm not sure about that. I could be wrong. But in the point from when I first realized that the gay situation of the AIDS epidemic was happening, it's 1978. I'm in Washington, D.C. Now, I'm saying this from my own point of view. People on the East Coast, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, we knew that things were happening. But we were basically pointing towards San Francisco. We thought it was just something that was happening in the Golden Gate area and around California. We thought that was just where it was happening, and it was sort of an isolated thing. It wasn't happening anywhere else. We were wrong. Boy, were we wrong. Because by the mid-80s, it had taken everybody, and as I said, I was in D.C., people don't realize what it was like to have a friend who was at that time diagnosed and dying, because you would have to have a friend, a very good friend, to come to the hospital to sometimes even feed you and dress you, because the dietary staff would not come into your room and feed you. You seldom got a doctor to come in to see you because it was so new and people were so afraid. And by the time you end up dying and have to go home, you have lost your job. You don't have anywhere to go. And if you're one of the kids who came here whose family had thrown them out and that kind of thing, you are really up shit creek. So you're out in the street, nowhere to go. There is no medicines for you. And you're going to die. One of your friends have got to take you in, because you're not going home. And normally, that's just the way it was. And I lost so many friends between where I was living in D.C. and New York that these kids today, or I should say a population of gay America today, can't fathom it. You don't know what it's like to lose 300, 400, 500 people in less than a year or two. They're all dead.
Did you have any like special friend that passed away?
I took care of at least a dozen friends. Wow. in the past 25 years. But they all died. They were going to die. There was no, at those times, there was no medicines like they have now. Those cocktails didn't exist then. And many of the medications that they were on, the side effects were as bad as dying. So they died.
Did it affect you in any way?
In ways that I think about it now, yes. Because you don't have any friends that you had in the 70s. Let's say the 70s. Here it is, 2017, and 90% of your friends are dead. But you have to keep living on. You have to make new friends, younger friends even, because all your old friends are dead. So you can't just sit around looking through scrapbooks and thinking about what he or she was like. They're gone, and they've been gone 35, 40 years. They're not coming back. And you had a good time with them for a small period, a small window in time. You had a really good time with these people. But then you wake up one morning and you look at one of the gay papers, like let's say The Blade, and the obituary columns, and you know 10 people in there.
Wow.
So it was hard.
How did you make new friends after this all happened?
Gay bars, you meet men, you drink, they find you attractive. And if they don't, you buy them another drink. At some point, they will find you attractive. That's the secret to that. And even that, sometimes you play a shell game. You get one of your friends to front for you. And you talk to the guy. And you'll see what happens. New York was very strange. I mean, if you want to talk about clean bars and safe bars where you're just going to come in and have a drink and maybe some hors d'oeuvres or something, and you're trying to meet a professional guy, that's a total different setting. Most of the bars in New York were gritty bars. They were very gritty bars. And I'm not going to say it in this interview because you'd have to cancel out everything I'm about to say.
Okay. Did you have any, like, serious relationships?
I did. My first lover was an entertainment columnist for Billboard magazine.
Wow.
I met him in Las Vegas. And that's one reason I don't have a big thing about the people in the entertainment industry. We had a very good 10 years together. And being that he was a writer for Billboard magazine, there was nowhere we didn't go in the entertainment world. We were invited to a lot of things. I will say one thing. You know, there's a song there was a very famous woman. Her name was Ethel Merman, and she did this song called I think it was called "No Business Like Show Business." But the reality is, in the song, I tell people not everything about them is appealing. Some of them are just real dogs. You wish you'd never met them, because you know sometimes you idolize people in the industry, and then you get to meet them. You go home and tear all that stuff up about them that you love so much, because they are the biggest asses. But you find that out once you get up and close with them. But I was glad that Timothy and I were 10 years together. And I got to be exposed in the industry. Like I said earlier in this interview, I wanted to do something in the entertainment world. It put me directly there. Right in it. But I was just at the right place at the right time. I had moved to Las Vegas, and he was working for a newspaper doing a weekly column when I met him.
Okay, so I guess moving on. What was life kind of like in your 30s? Was it completely different in your 20s? Was it more fun?
You party in your 20s.
Yeah.
And you're almost dead in your 30s, especially if you're gay, in the sense that gays who like to party, gay men who like to party, and women who like to party, and if you're living in a major city, going out is a lifeblood thing. There are people who say, well, we don't go out. I've got a lover now, or I've never been that kind of person who wanted to go to a bar. There are lots of gay men who will tell you, I'm not a bar person, and I don't want to go to a bar to meet a guy. Those guys are fine. They're not bar entities. On the other hand, part of that coin, it's your lifeblood. You're not going to meet anybody if you don't go to the bars. If you don't go to their cocktail parties, you don't go to their brunches, you're out of the loop. You've got to go. And Washington was a very strange place because, being that it's a political city, every 4 years, the people who you knew that were Republicans got thrown out if the Democrats came in, and vice versa. If the Democrats came in, the Republicans came in, they lost their jobs. So you said toodaloo to them. Bye. You know, I loved you a lot. But, you know, it's a different administration in there. They all leave. They go back to wherever they came from because they don't stay in the city once the new administrations come in.
Were you ever married or ever close to being married?
I was married 3 times.
Wow. Okay.
And that's all I'm going to say pretty much about that.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. So I guess we'll transition, I guess, to your 40s. Was it better or worse?
I came into my own in my 40s.
Okay.
I came into my own. I really started pushing myself with my writing and my playwriting. And I sort of calmed down. I was single. I was alone. And I was still dating. I'm a pretty attractive guy. Pretty interesting. So I wasn't lacking in the dating situation. It was just that I just didn't want to settle down with just any guy. And I'll bring this up, even though this hasn't been said. If you're in a relationship outside of dating another Afro-American guy, if you're an interracial, like my lover Timothy was from Billboard, there's a whole lot you have to deal with. A lot.
Was it different compared to dating an African-American?
Even in the gay community, they have problems with interracial couples. And I mean, even if you're an Asian guy dating a white guy, or you're Italian and you're dating somebody from Denmark or something, they have a problem with not sticking with Italian, black and black, white and white. Not all, but you can get some real assholes who just can't see how that's possible, that the two of you could be together.
Right.
And you have to confront it. You can't be sly about it. You have to confront it, right, dip it in his bud right then and there.
Is that what you did?
You can believe it.
Oh, I can see it. Okay. Do you feel like you had the most success in your 40s? Because you were saying with your playwright and...
I don't think it has happened yet.
No.
No, I just recently signed a young man who came by yesterday, to do a project for me. He is so talented. I hope this is the one that brings it all to the table.
Okay. I guess we could talk about, again, your 50s. Like, what was it like? Better?
I outlived everybody. Outlived everybody. Parents became old and died. Siblings died. Really good friends died. But as I said earlier, you can't dwell on that. You've got to make new friends. You have to keep alert. Even if you live alone. I'm pretty happy. I live alone, but I'm a pretty happy guy. I live by myself, but I'm not without any friends. I've got lots of friends in the city of Roanoke, but not a partner. And if that was to happen, I'd be okay with it. I'd be all right with it if the person who I liked a lot was somebody I thought I wanted to put up with. You know, but now you can marry now. And I'm just waiting to see, you know, for those who did the matrimony I do's, how long most of them stay together. Because it's too early to say that, you know, it's a win-win thing. But I know everybody wanted it, as many people wanted to be married and be recognized by it. So we'll see. If somebody reads this article and says, I'm going to go after that guy after I read this article, I'm available. Trust me.
How did you feel when gay marriage was passed as the law in June?
I was happy.
14. Yeah?
I didn't like all the people who suddenly start sending me wedding invitations. Because I didn't like a lot of them to begin with. But they got married, and I went. I sent them something.
Did you go to them or no?
Oh no, I've gone to several. Huh? Several little private homes in the city. They've had them. They didn't necessarily have big church weddings, but they rented out a hall or something like the. You know, and they had the reception, and they got married at Justice of the Peace, or they got married out in the park or something. It was nice, and it was different. But you know, you still get them a wedding gift.
Yes. So, do you feel that it's better to be gay now in 2017 compared to like in the 70s and the 80s?
Yeah, it's better to be a gay, even a younger gay person now. Because everybody who has gone prior to them have already bit the dust and done the things that really needed to be done to be gay. I mean, really took the beating. You can be gay now. I swear to God, you can go to see these kids now at the clubs and out in school or whatever. They have these organizations for kids, and I shouldn't say kids, but the gay youth population. You can really be a gay teenager now, even though you may still get bullying and that kind of thing, which is different from what we went through, because now everything, it seems to be on the internet. Everybody wants to kill you on the internet by saying something ugly to you. Before, they just said it in your face. Now you have to read it online. I don't get that. See, not that I'm some sort of ancient dinosaur. It's just, I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Okay. Are you involved with anything in the LGBTQ community?
Not anymore.
Okay. What do you used to do?
I mean, when they in the D.C. area, I used to do a lot. When they would have the gay prides, I was always at somebody's table, working for an entity of that type. Whether it was like the gay defense funds or something like that, the lawyers, the women lawyers for gay men, and all that kind of stuff, whatever it may be, I would always work that day with some sort of organization to help out. I really don't do that much down here. I can't tell you why I don't. It's just that I haven't. I just haven't.
You mentioned Gay Pride. Did you like going there? Was it fun? Was it
Roanoke or D.C.? New York? What? Which?
All of them. Any of them.
Roanoke's Gay Pride has changed a lot, and there's more and more people who come out for it. But once again, I don't really recognize anybody when I go there. Maybe a handful of people that I can relate to that from a day and time that I'm talking about that come to the Pride organization. Everybody else is 18 to 21. I don't know who they are. But I mean, they're gay and just like myself, but they're just really young. So I just sort of walk around and see what's up with them.
You were just mentioning like the younger people. What would you say to somebody that is struggling to come out?
Closets are for clothes. Just redo your closet. Don't live in your closet.
Okay.
You'll thank me for this.
In your free time, what do you like to do right now?
write in my journal, I like going out to dinner with friends. Let's go out tonight. And one of my friends is a very good artist, painter here in the city. I go with him a lot to the art galleries and shows. Him and his wife just recently married. And I go to dinner, and they come here. And I knew him when he was just struggling. And we've been together a long time, so he's one of the few people that I can relate to, of still being around, and we know each other for so long.
Yeah.
Outside of that, the city has changed, and there's a whole lot to do now. There's much more to do here in Roanoke than there used to be. And you just have to be open to doing it.
What made you come back to Roanoke?
I needed to get myself together and get out of the bigger city, because it was going to kill me if I didn't find some time to come home and relax and really depress. D.C. and New York will take it all out of you. All out of you. And running 24/7 with friends and trying to be on top of it and be gay at the same time, that's a lot to do. It's a lot to do. I actually found myself in a comfort zone coming back here. And Roanoke is one of those cities where it's affordable to live. I tell my friends in D.C. and New York now, I pay $575 for this thing. You pay $4,000 for a studio. You know, they need to come to Roanoke.
Had Roanoke changed a lot while you were gone?
God, yes.
In what way?
The attitudes have changed a lot. But it's still a very segregated city. It doesn't want to think of itself like that, but it still very much is. Everybody has their own little plot of land that is theirs, and their little enclaves, whether you live in Old Southwest, where we are today, or Hunting Hill, not the Hunting Hills, but what is it, Avonham area, or Southeast or Northwest, very territorial. And seldom do they get along unless it's necessary. But you have to give Roanoke one thing. It is a democratically held city. And that's a good thing if you're a Democrat. If you're a Republican here, you need to move. Yes, I said it. That ought to make a few people uncomfortable. But it's true. Roanoke is a democratically held city. But that bothers me too, because it's like living in San Diego or something. You know, it's all Republicans. So if you're from another party, you can forget it, whether you're gay or straight or whatever. And I don't know what the gay community's political choices are. Are all gays in Roanoke Democrats, or some of them libertarians? I'm not sure.
Do you think people are more accepting here in Roanoke now, or is it a little different?
Well, you know, people die off, you know what I'm saying? The old regime, they die. But that daughters and sons and grandchildren take some of that with them. They still hold on to a lot of crazy realities. But I don't blame them. I don't. It's something that they still hold on to. And, you know, you have to pick it apart. You have to be very careful what you want to do with these people. And my credo is this: pick your battle. Pick your battle. Don't tote anyone else's water. And you will live a long life. There's too many gay people who go out and fight all these different battles, even if it's just for the gay causes. Just pick the one that that really is, you know, something you're interested in, leave the other 19 problems to somebody else, because you're not going to get it done. Policy in these things are what the problem is, and you can't change state legislation and policies overnight. It could take 10, 15, 20 years before anything changes. And you could be working on that particular thing for years and years and years and years. And you get burnt out.
Do you think that the segregation will ever change in Roanoke? Because I feel like there's a little bit of a divide in Roanoke from what I can tell. And do you think in the next few years it will be different? Or no?
It's not just Roanoke. The internet has brought about a whole new reality of segregation for everybody. You now go online to talk about faggots, lesbians, the Ku Klux Klan, Princess Leah. I don't care. People get online now and say the most hateful things. And it's because you can be an anonymous person online, have all kinds of hate speech or tweet it or whatever, which brings back the old problems that most people didn't want to address to begin with. Now, it's in the wild, wild west of the internet. You can be a complete ass now and just, you know, sign on and sign off. And if the segregation speech is what you're after, you can find it. You can find it even in Roanoke. In Roanoke. But once again, you got to stand up to that kind of crap and you have to pick your battle. If you see it coming towards you, you have to nip it in its bud. You really do. There's segregation is segregation. I've been in much worse cities than Roanoke where the segregation is just, it's just rampant.
Yeah. Where is that?
Well, there were parts of Baltimore that was even, is like that. Baltimore is a very separated, segregated city. And it's a much larger city. Parts of California is like that. You would think they'd be very progressive. They're not. They're not.
Okay. So, sorry. So if there's one thing you can change about Roanoke, what would it be?
That gay people and really progressive people change what the problems are in your community. Don't just sit there and say, well, somebody else will do this. Wrong. You need to put your name on a ballot. You know, really get out there and do a grassroots thing if you think something can be changed and made better. And challenge the status quo. Otherwise, it will not change. People get very comfortable if just watching stuff slowly happen, just slowly happen. And usually tell you don't make waves. Don't make waves about stuff. Just leave things as they are. People are happy. They're not. They're not.
Do you have any plans to move somewhere else, or do you plan on staying in Roanoke?
I would stay here and keep a place in Roanoke regardless if I've decided to move. I'd keep somewhere here. You're only happy where... Happiness doesn't matter where you move. Home is where you make it. And if you're unhappy in New York, you'll be unhappy in New York. If you're unhappy in Roanoke, you'll be unhappy in Roanoke. It won't make any difference. It won't make any difference.
Do you think you've challenged the status quo of being a gay black man?
Many times. And alive. Because you could be, I could encounter a very bad thing quickly. And whether it's police or anything of that nature, you've got to be on guard. I mean, on point. Or it could go bad really quickly. But you can't be afraid of it. Being gay and black and in America puts me at the most risk of anybody in this country. I really have challenges. Most people have no idea about day in, day out. But I'm not afraid to walk out my door, and I'm not afraid of confrontation, even if it comes my way. But when they find out you're gay and black male, you got a double whammy, and you got to deal with it, because it's not going to go away. It's never going to go away.
You mentioned the police. Have you ever had anything happen? Because right now, police brutality is...
Police brutality isn't new. You know, I remember the very first time I ever thought police were crazy. And I remember it was in the 60s and we were watching these civil rights people being beat up and dogs biting them and stuff, and if it's on television, you know, it's on television. But it's 1962, 63, and America is getting its first view of what this nation really is like. Racism is not something everybody wants to talk about, but I'm not talking about from the standpoint of LGBT community and Afro-Americans. I'm talking about no matter what you want to say, we don't want to talk about it. We just don't. The system is rigged. The system is rigged. Housing is rigged. Politics is rigged. You've got to challenge everybody. There's no easy way to walk in and say, well, these people will be okay with this and they won't mind. You're out of your damn mind. What are you thinking, Oz? Listen, it's not like that at all. It's a constant challenge. Even if you are a woman today, women face the same problems of getting what they want constantly to prove that point. The Planned Parenthood thing with now going on, the Roe versus Wade, which has always been one of the big issues. A woman should have women in this country don't realize what it was like in the 50s and the 60s when you would be getting your abortion behind Sunnyside Market.
Wow.
No safety nets. Or some woman who was an orderly in a hospital who had worked with some, had a little bit of medical knowledge, would be doing your abortion. You may or may not come home. Most women don't realize that or can remember that. But ask your mother and your grandmother. You want to hold on to certain things that are a woman's right. You should fight for it because it's your right. As a woman, who am I to tell you what to do with your... I mean, let me tell you how you can stop all of this. Tell men you're going to get a vasectomy at 15, whether you like it or not. That'll be the end of that because that's not happening. No man is going to have you tell him how to deal with his sexual life and his reproduction thing. If you had a class action suit that was saying something that men have now got to, at a certain age, stop reproducing, you can only have one child or two children like you have in China, you'd have a war on your hands here in America. No man would put up with that. You'd have legislation to have you put in jail. But on the opposite side of the coin, they want to tell you how you are supposed to handle your sexual life. Screw them.
Is that what you live by?
Screw them. I tell all my friends, listen, when I was in high school, I had several friends of mine, female friends, who terminated their pregnancies because they didn't want a baby and they couldn't bring a baby into the world, and they lived in a family situation. Bringing a child wasn't going to help anything. We had to go to Richmond, but you could go to Richmond before you could go to Roanoke. There was a clinic here, but normally most of them went to Richmond because it was easier to leave Roanoke and get it done in Richmond and come back.
So moving on, what do you think about the new bathroom bill in North Carolina?
I don't get it.
Why is that?
No, I'm just saying I don't get it. So if you're transgender, if I transgendered and I go to North Carolina, does that means I can still go into the man's bathroom because I was born a man? Is that what it really means? Instead of going to the bathroom because now I'm a woman? I also want to clarify that for me.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
So
you can go.
Okay, that's confusing for anybody. If I was just coming from a sports event, let's say you're at one of the stadiums and I come in pretty much an effeminate sex change guy, but I didn't have it all finished, you're going to get some feedback from that. You just are. Or if you go into the woman's bathroom and you used to be a man and there are women sitting there, even though some of them are going to be accepting of you, there are going to be women in there who not so great. So I don't know what to tell you on that one. Because that confuses even me. Mm-hmm. So I know why everybody else is fighting what it means. Because it's just confusing. If you're going to be a transgender and you are transgendering to a woman and you pretty much look like that woman and you don't really look any more different than that, then for me, I don't care if you go into the women's bathroom. But if you sit down and say, well, I used to be a man, I'm going to go into the man's bathroom now. Why did you want to transgender and be a woman? You're going to still use the men's room. I'm not that bright. I'm not trying to be Spock or anything. It's just confusing to me. So I don't know what views other people have on it.
Do you think your life would have been completely different if you weren't an outgoing person? Because you seem very outgoing and fun.
Yes, it would have been. I never wanted to be one of those gay men or women in the bar who were... They became lushes and drunks, and they were all because, see, they were lonely. And the problem with gay society, as far as gay men are concerned, everything is youth orientated. You have to be a good looking guy for the longest time where men are concerned, gay men are concerned. But what gay men don't realize, you will age. So your handsome little ass at 21 is hot now, but you will be 40 soon, really faster than you know. Your life will change. And those same guys that you come into the bar when you're 40, 45 won't speak to you because you're an older gay person, or maybe your looks have changed a great deal and changed. Well, you used to be a real hottie. That's the only problem I found in years and years of going into the bars. It was so superficial about looks and body, and you had to look a certain way to get, you know, to get whatever. I never considered myself a good-looking guy. I'm not. I don't consider myself a good-looking man at all. But what I am is charismatic. So I got lots of dates, and I had lots of handsome men who dated me. But it wasn't because of my looks. It was because I was an outgoing and sure of myself person. And the other thing was, I was Afro-American and gay. I was really an oddity. I was an oddity. I think I still am an oddity to a lot of men. Because they're not used to seeing a black man doing but so many things and definitely not thinking about dating him or me, unless, you know, you can find some sort of common ground with this guy. Otherwise, it's just a date or two, or it's just, you know, one of those one-night sexual things, and it's over. It's done. You're not going to have any long-term relationship with this guy. It's just the way it is.
How did you get so much confidence?
If you live in America and you're Afro-American, you don't have time to cry about it.
Yeah.
You don't have time to have the blues. You don't have time to worry about if something went wrong or what am I going to do from here. Or is someone going to help me, give me a what you call a hand up or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are illusions. They are absolutely something that you don't have time to think about. Because lots of times when you leave your parents' home or your community, you got to make it. You got to make it.
Yeah. Did you ever have a low point, or were you ever lonely at some point?
Yes. Probably when several friends of mine came back from New York and it was buried here, and I would attend their funeral. I'd be at some point at a low point, you know, that day or that month while thinking about them. That's probably the worst. I've had friends who were murdered here in the city. They found their bodies and they committed suicide. And you get a low point at that moment when, you know, you get a phone call. I was at my lowest, I think, when the Backstreet shooting happened, because someone who I used to date was shot, and I remember his mother called me to come to the hospital because she says, I don't think he's going to make it, so you need to come now. So I did. I mean, he had another lover at the time, but I came to see him because they just didn't think he would pull through. That was my lowest point, when the shooting happened and all the people that, and I knew several people who were at the bar that night that you know, including the guy that died, the Overstreet guy. That was probably my lowest point here in Roanoke.
Really? What was the shooting?
Backstreet.
Okay.
Backstreet had a shooting in 2000, was it one? You can look online. It says the Backstreet shooting. The guy who killed those people was named Ronald Gay, G-A-Y. But it was September the 22nd. I'm going to tell you exactly when it happened. I was at home watching a TV show at the time. It was called The Commissioner or something like that. It came on CBS. And one of my best friends, we normally went to Backstreet on Friday night because it was a popular place to go. And we decided not to go. He said, well, let's just do Saturday night. I said, fine, because I'm tired. By 1 o'clock in the morning, my phone is ringing off the wall with people telling me that people have been shot and murdered and killed at the bar. And for the next probably several months, Roanoke is the most watched and televised city in the United States. There is news media from around the world that has ascended on Roanoke because of the Backstreet murder. Not prior to what you see today in Atlanta, in Orlando, that thing happened here. Nightline with Ted Koppel, ABC, NBC, British press, they ascended on Roanoke. It was like nothing you'd ever seen in your life. And you couldn't be in the closet then because the spotlight was on Roanoke. The world was on Roanoke. The city council, I felt sorry for them because they didn't know what to do. They really didn't. They had to change a lot of things quickly. So the Orlando shooting just brought back a lot of things about safety and being safe. Because I recently attended the bar called The Park. I had no idea they had that much outside security for you to get into that bar. The world has changed to where it's just crazy to go inside of a bar, to try to get inside of the bar now. Because any fool could have a concealed weapon or something inside of a boot or something or whatever. I don't know. But it's really nutty. I had never seen that much security at a bar locally here in the city. It threw me.
What are your thoughts on the Orlando shooting? Did it bring back some memories?
It did. It brought back the Backstreet shooting. Wow. And I felt sorry because there was even more people murdered there. He took out quite, what was 19 or 20 people. This guy only ended up in Roanoke killing one person and injuring maybe four or five people that were, you know, severely injured, but he killed one, and that was enough. That was enough. But the Orlando people didn't have the hatred for gays that happened with the funeral here after the shooting, because you had that crazy guy from Westboro Baptist Church and all these hate groups that also came to Roanoke, and they picketed the funeral. So they had to have special security and what do you call it, state troopers and all this other thing at the funeral. It was crazy. And it was sort of sad, too.
Yeah. Okay, so we're out of time, but is there anything else that you want to say?
Tote no one's water. That's it.
That's it. Okay, thank you so much.